morning, everyone. This remote meeting of the Climate and Energy Finance and Policy Committee is called to order, and the clerk will take the roll.
Chair Long.
Present.
Vice Chair Akam.
Present.
Minority Leader Smaczynski.
Present.
Representative Bierman.
Present.
Representative Bowe.
Present.
Representative Christensen.
Present.
Representative Franson.
Franson, present.
Representative Grunhagen.
Present.
Representative Hollins. Representative Hollins. Representative Hornstein.
Present.
Representative Igo.
Igo, present.
Representative Lee.
Lee, present.
Representative Lippert.
Lippert, present.
Representative Liz Lagarde is excused. Representative Mecklen.
Mecklen, present.
Representative Munson.
Munson, present.
Representative Stevenson. Representative Stevenson.
Representative Stevenson's excused for the beginning of the hearing.
Ah, great.
All right, a quorum is present. Vice Chair Akam, we have 4 minutes for today from March 1st, 3rd, 8th, and 10th. Have you had a chance to look at those minutes?
I have, Mr. Chair, and I move approval.
Representative Akam moves approval of the minutes. Any discussion? All those in favor say aye.
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 Any opposed? The motion prevails and the minutes are adopted. So our first bill up is House File 2200, but I don't know that we have the bill author here yet. Let's see, let's give it 1 minute and then we will. Proceed, perhaps, to the second bill. Oh, here we are. Representative Vang's bill is the first on the agenda, House File 2200. Representative Vang, welcome to the Climate and Energy Committee. I will move that House File 2200 be laid over for possible inclusion. And I understand you have an author's amendment. Would you like to describe your author's amendment?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My apologies for being late. I also experienced some technical difficulties.
No problem.
My amendment is a DE. What it does is it just expands the bill to include other local units of government, such as counties and school districts. And that is the gist of my amendment.
Okay, the amendment is coded A22. Any discussion to the A22 to get the bill in the shape the author would like? All right, seeing none, all those in favor say aye. Aye.
Aye. Aye. Aye.
Any opposed? The A22 is adopted. Representative Vang, please tell us about your bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. House File 2200 would create a local government climate action grant program. The goal of this program is to increase the number of local governments in Minnesota who are planning to reduce their greenhouse gas emissions and to build resilience as climate impact grows. The program will be administered by the Minnesota Pollution Control Agency and would award grants up to $50,000 to local governments in Minnesota who wish to create a climate action plan with a match requirement. A preference will be given to local governments that engage a broad array of residents, organizations, and institutions. Beyond this, this bill will give local governments flexibility in their planning, how they will plan, what they focus on, and their recommended action steps that would be up to each local government to decide. The program will build a relationship with the Minnesota Pollution Control Agency's Environmental Assistance Grant Program, which in recent years has provided support for a range of local government planning and sustainability programs. More context of this bill, the local government climate action planning is a growing practice in Minnesota. Since 2013, 13 cities, 13 cities and one county in Minnesota have created standalone climate action plans. These cities are urban, suburban, and in greater Minnesota. They are as large as Hennepin County and as small as Grand Marais. This type of planning is in demand because local residents are advocating for it, and local elected officials are often the ones responsible for preparing and adapting to climate impacts. This year, 16 Minnesota cities declared climate emergencies. These resolutions are a way to acknowledge the reality we're all facing and to get our local governments moving forward with practical and popular solutions. These grants will be one important way the state can support local governments that are choosing to plan and prepare. And I also want to thank the League of Minnesota Cities for their support. Their written testimony is provided in this committee. And with that, Mr. Chair, I will yield my time for my testifiers who can tell you more about their local need for these grants.
Thank you so much, Representative Vang. Looks like we have six individuals sign up to testify, and we'll begin with our four city council members from across the state. And first, we will start with Councilmember Larry Kraft from St. Louis Park. Please introduce yourself for the record and proceed.
Great. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Great to be here. Thank you, committee members. My name is Larry Kraft. I am a city council member at large from St. Louis Park. I also led the convening of the Minnesota City's Climate Caucus, which is a voluntary and nonpartisan coalition of primarily city elected officials from cities all around the state. And it was created to share best practices and also to influence state policy to help us meet our clean energy and climate goals. So I have three points to make in favor of this. One, local governments can be very effective at this. Having a plan is extremely helpful, and cities need support. So first, local governments can be very effective at planning for and making progress on climate clean energy action. In St. Louis Park, we touch on so much, and I know this is true of many cities, including citizen education and engagement, street design, including pedestrian and biking infrastructure, tree planting, EV charging infrastructure, land use, solar energy, and partnering with utilities and energy efficiency programs. These are all things that we're involved in that our Climate Action Plan guide. And I'll mention that most of those generate significant amount of economic activity in Minnesota. Second, having a plan, a climate action plan, has been incredibly helpful in St. Louis Park. It's provided us a roadmap and a way of measuring progress. It helps us answer implementation questions like, how do we start? How are we doing? What do we do next? And what are the most impactful things we can do? Third, cities need support. As Representative Vang mentioned, about 6 weeks ago, coming out of the Minnesota Cities Climate Caucus, cities from across the state came together to declare a climate emergency at the same time. I was about to read my testimony was going to say, to date, 19 cities and one county have participated in this. But I have to modify that because last night, West St. Paul also passed a climate emergency resolution. So to date, 20 cities and one county have participated in this campaign or previously declared a climate emergency, and there are more coming. These localities are from all around the state, and many don't yet have a climate action plan. One of the biggest things I've heard, especially from small to mid-sized cities, is that they need funding and technical assistance to get started. And this kind of funding that we're talking about here can be the path to getting started into that assistance. And I want to close with a story that I think a bit of about Grand Marais and their challenges in getting to climate action. So a 12-year-old student at the time, Olya Wright, and others from her Nordic Nature Group went before the Grand Marais City Council several years ago and convinced them to go down the path of creating a climate action plan. The challenge that Grand Marais had was they didn't have the staff to do it. So how were they gonna do this? There was some help they were able to get from some nonprofits, and then Olya went before some potential funders and was able to generate funding in the order of around $20,000 to hire some resources to help them complete their plan and get started on implementation. That was amazing, but not every city has an OLIA, although I wish they did. To scale that, this kind of thing would be so beneficial. So thank you again. And to summarize, local governments are very effective at this, at climate and clean energy action. Having a plan is extremely helpful, and cities need your support. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Councilmember Kraft. Next, we will hear from Councilmember Shelley Dahlquist with the Moorhead City Council. Welcome to the committee. Please introduce yourself and proceed.
Thank you. I am Shelley Dahlquist. I'm on City Council in Moorhead. I'm in Ward 1. We have four wards. And fellow council member Steve Lindos has been putting this stuff together, and he is out of town. So he said, would you? And I said, I will do it, but it's not going to be as good as Steve's. So we just passed the climate emergency resolution in January, and we didn't get to put a lot of hoopla into it. It was on consent because we had other things going on. But in town here, we have two colleges, and then of course across the river in Fargo, we have NDSU, Go Bison. And I also have a community college or a tech school. So we have a lot of young people, a lot of students in town, and they took the initiative. Dr. Ken Foster at Concordia College put together, he applied for a Bush grant and put together a resiliency team of different people in the community. And so this is a couple of years ago, and he got things going. So of course it's contagious, and we want to have it here in Moorhead to take over what he started. And we are still in contact with, we have a group of Concordia students that are helping us decide how to put this committee together, who should be on it, and how we decide that. We're all really excited. But we need some help. And so if we could get some assistance on that, that would be great, because we are just starting putting together the committee and then the climate action plan. We are on the Red River. It divides Moorhead from Fargo, North Dakota. And the change in I've lived here all my life, and the change in the flooding is astronomical. We have a large diversion program going, and a lot of it's on the North Dakota side. Minnesota's a little bit better off where we are on Moorhead. But anyway, it's billions of dollars that's been going into this too. So we're not flooded out. And a lot of homes were bought out along the river. So that's one thing. And another thing, just personally, I remember growing up, we had an apple tree in the backyard, and then the smaller decorative apple in the front. And we had dandelions, we had clover, so we had bees. You in the springtime, the trees would just be buzzing, and you'd have to be careful. You couldn't go out barefoot, you know. But I don't see that anymore. And I'll be 59 in October. And in my lifetime, I have seen that change. So we need to do this. And it would be nice to get some help with this bill so that we can put that together. I'd like to really focus on getting our kids involved with this, because all my kids are grown up, of course, but they would come home and share things that we have changed our lifestyles, not using the plastic. They'd come home with reusable bags and I believe the kids would be very helpful, and then they can continue on. So that's one thing I would like to do, is target some kind of education for the younger people to continue trying to fight this climate emergency the best that they can, and to deal with it. We're going to be okay, but our future generations are the ones that are going to have to be dealing with this. And it's going to affect everyone. No one's going to be immune. So thank you. Thank you for letting me give a little history of the Moorhead and what's going on here.
Thank you, Councilmember Dahlquist, for being with us. Next, we will hear from Councilmember Evan Brown with Red Wing. Please introduce yourself and proceed.
Thank you, Chair, members of the Minnesota House Climate, Energy, and Energy Finance and Policy Committee. That's a bit of a mouthful. Thank you very much. I'm Evan Brown. I am a council member from the city of Red Wing and city council vice president. I have a long history in the city of Red Wing, working on issues of sustainability and moving our city to help address the issues of climate change. Before I was on council, I did serve on our sustainability commission, so I have a pretty long time to kind of help our city in guiding these. Red Wing is meeting. I want to say I am so supportive of HF 2200. I really, knowing how a small city manages and deals with planning for climate change issues is it's a lot on us because we are a small city. However, Red Wing is meeting our commitment to address climate change. We recently passed the resolution with other Minnesota cities declaring a climate emergency. And as I said at that vote, these effects are real and they're global, but they're also local. These are not effects that are happening somewhere else to someone else. They're happening to us right now today. That is an emergency. And that's how I take it. And I think we all have to kind of focus in on that. Red Wing has continued to commit to addressing climate change. In 2007, we signed with the U.S. Mayor's Climate Protection Agreement. And in 2008, we created our Sustainability Commission. A major tenet of our 2040 comprehensive plan has been sustainability and a deep analysis of our greenhouse gas emissions and how to reduce them. And as part of that, we have in our comprehensive plan a commitment to reduce our greenhouse gas emissions by 80% by 2040. We've developed a climate action work plan. It's a little different model than a full-scale climate action plan, and this is the area I want to most speak and why I believe this this idea for a grant program is so important. Our model is a 5-year work plan committed to actionable items to reduce our greenhouse gas emissions. This model is focused on real on actions we can take right now. And I think most importantly, it's more cost effective for our city of size to undertake. Red Wing is about 16,000 residents, certainly on here in other cities that are certainly much smaller than us. Grand Marais comes to mind, that need these resources. So I can see how this grant program can really help cities start the process to create these plans. You know, a full-scale climate action plan with a 20-year horizon, those plans are pretty expensive, and they are really can be very much out of reach. As Councilmember Kraft said, you know, I mean, just dealing with the staff time can be a hugely overwhelming. So our plan shortens the time frame and analysis to that shorter period, but it is also one that will need to be updated and repeated more frequently because of that shortened time frame. So I remain very hopeful of that model. And again, this program can help us continue that process. And City of Red Wing has also been considering resiliency planning, and we've been looking for grant opportunities to do that planning. We're also considering implementing programs in our climate action work plan to assist residents and build businesses more directly to help us reduce our greenhouse gas emissions. And this grant program could help significantly in that area as well. HF 2200 helps cities address the issues of climate change by letting them develop their own plans. And I believe that the state should be really helping cities with resources to address climate change. We are on the front lines of dealing with climate change, but we can't do this alone. We need the state there. We need the federal government there. We really need everybody to pitch in for this. So again, I just want to say how much I support this bill, and I look forward to hopefully seeing it implemented and you pushing it to the next step. So thank you very much for your time.
Thank you so much for your testimony this morning. And our final council member is Council Member Rick Blake from Grand Rapids City Council. Please introduce yourself and proceed.
Good morning, committee members. My name is Rick Blake. I'm a city councilor in Grand Rapids, Minnesota, and I'm glad to be here to testify in favor of this bill. I would like to say that Grand Rapids declared a climate emergency thanks to the efforts of Michelle Tovin, who couldn't be here, so I agreed to step in, and I'm really glad that I can be here. So like I said, on January 24th, we declared a climate emergency. We appointed a committee, a climate emergency committee, that their first meeting will be this Friday, actually. So I'd like to piggyback a little bit on what Larry Kraft said earlier about how effective cities can be in addressing this problem. One of the examples that Grand Rapids has is a 2-megawatt solar garden that was the first community solar with a city and a utility and a public utility commission cooperating. And that whole thing was driven too by another example of a group that can have an impact, and that's a local green energy team. Without their encouragement, that never would have happened. But one of the things that did happen while we were doing that was that we committed to our customers that we would not do a project that would result in having to subsidize that solar garden. So initially it sounded like that was really going to be a slam dunk, but as we went on, it was difficult. So any source of funding that we could have had would have helped that. But eventually what made the project go was we installed battery storage so that we could reduce the peak energy each month. And that ended up making the project positive cash flow. So it wasn't an issue. Another example of something that we're doing in Grand Rapids at city level is we have the first rural autonomous vehicle project that's going to kick off this summer. There will be somebody in there watching the vehicle, but as it goes through routes in Grand Rapids, it'll reduce the need for people to own cars, for example. So that's another thing that's going to happen in Grand Rapids, that May Mobility is going to do that. We've also done some LED lighting, and I'm sure other cities have done that. Near Grand Rapids is an experimental forest where they actually have the forest enclosed and have created a future environment to see how the forest survives. Things like that are important too. Two examples last summer of the effect of the climate emergency. I went to a meeting, I think I started at 7 o'clock, and when I left that meeting at 7:45 in Grand Rapids, 5,000 people had lost power just in that 45 minute period. And you know, the strange thing was it didn't really affect a lot of other communities in Minnesota, but it did affect Grand Rapids. And I think, although you can't point to one incident, certainly the pattern of that occurring over and over is evidence of the kinds of things that we're going to have to do to harden our infrastructure. It took a long time to get power back to those customers. Another example that affected all of us in Minnesota was the drought last summer, and that was severe. So hardening our infrastructure and improving our ability to cope with drought, those are examples of things that we can do. But who knows what kinds of creative solutions this climate emergency committee might come up with, and how important that seed money can be to come up with creative solutions for dealing with the climate emergency and its effect on all our communities. So I wholeheartedly support this bill, and I'm really grateful for the opportunity to be here. Thank you.
Thank you so much for being with us. Next, we will hear from Dr. Kate Knuth. Welcome back to the committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and committee members. I'm Kate Knuth and here to testify in support of House File 2200. And thank you, Representative Vang, for bringing this bill forward. I recently, as a consultant with the 100% campaign, researched and published an overview of city climate action planning and the one county, Hennepin County, that has completed a climate action planning process. And that's included in your packets, members. So if you want to look more closely at seeing what cities are doing. But I wanted to share some overall observations from that, including the fact that there are still many cities and counties and other local governments that need help and support to do the climate action planning necessary as our need to ramp up our emissions reductions continues, as well as the need to plan for and prepare for the climate impacts that are already here and that will be increasing over the next years and decades. So right now, Minnesota, there are 13 cities and one county that have completed city local climate action planning processes and resulted in a report. There's a range of different kinds of approaches cities have taken to their planning. Cities like Red Wing, as was noted, and very recently Duluth have taken a shorter term focus with climate action work plans to really focus on what can we do now to lay to make emissions reductions and lay the foundation for more climate protection and preparedness going forward. Cities like Albert Lea have taken a really more expansive approach with both a focus on emissions reductions and on adaptation and resilience. The city of Minneapolis had one of the first climate action plans in 2013. They will be going through another climate action planning process this year in 2022 and really centering equity in racial equity in the work because the impacts of climate change affect people in our community in different ways. It's not everyone in crisis it faces increased risk from climate change, but not everyone faces that risk equally. And overall in Minnesota, about a third of people live in a city or county that has done a climate action plan, which we found in our report. So there's still a significant part of our state that has not yet done a standalone climate action planning. Now, many cities are doing different pieces of climate work. We found climate action work happens in comprehensive plans. It happens with the XL partners in energy work. It happens potentially with a broader sustainability plan. It happens with zoning and land use decision making. So there are many ways that cities and local governments show up to do climate work. And even if they're not doing climate work, they're having climate impacts in the way they design transportation infrastructure, stormwater infrastructure, density decisions, things like that all have climate impacts. But we are at a point where cities across the state are declaring climate emergencies, where the evidence is overwhelming from the world scientists. I know your committee heard from an IPCC lead author just in this last week or so and talked about the need for really digging down at the local level to make sure individuals and families and communities are doing the work necessary to make the changes to lessen impact and doing the work necessary to prepare for what is coming. And that is exactly what happens with a local government climate action planning process. It really combines what we need to do to strengthen our ability to take on climate and connects individuals and communities into that work really effectively. Sometimes state or federal policymaking can feel a little far away. It's really essential for what we need to do on climate change, but to get all Minnesotans involved in this work, it will happen through that connection with and that convening with local governments. And we see the demand and the desire for this kind of leadership. And I think the state stepping up to support people all over Minnesota digging in together and building the kind of communities we know we deserve is really exciting. And that's why I support House File 2200. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you so much, Dr. Knuth. And our final presenter, speaker on the bill, and then we'll move to questions, is Ms. Kathleen Doran Norton. Please introduce yourself and proceed.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and committee members. My name is Kathleen Doran Norton. I live near Northfield in Bridgewater Township, where I served four terms as a supervisor on our township board. We didn't need to declare a climate emergency. We experienced 3 years of climate emergencies, consecutive floods year after year after year, each 8 to 9 inches of rain in 24 hours, each costing between a third and a half of our township levy and damages, washing all the gravel off our roads, throwing a 12-foot culvert vertically through a paved road, shortening the life of other culverts and bridges by half. I've stood in a road ditch looking up at our truck resting on 6 inches of gravel with nothing but air underneath. Following those floods and a year of packed and angry town meetings, we engaged in some very simple, focused climate adaptation planning. We did a terrain analysis of two flood-prone watersheds, and we implemented three projects to store and infiltrate stormwater, protecting our residents and those downstream in Northfield. Funded from the DNR Office of Flood Mitigation, our county's SWCD, subordinated service district fees, and our own township funds. This past fall, my county, Rice County, passed an updated comprehensive plan, which included for the first time a sustainability chapter. This only happened because of the urging of involved citizens and the leadership of Commissioner Malika. And this winter, the county commission created a sustainability committee looking for ways to create a full-fledged plan and implement it. So I am so glad this amended bill includes counties. Consider county responsibilities, solid and hazardous waste management, disaster planning, hazard mitigation, land use controls, transportation, public health, shoreland and floodplain protection. All of these are critical climate adaptation and mitigation efforts. But out of 87 counties, as you've heard, only one has developed a climate action plan. I'd like my county to be the second. So I support HF 2200, providing planning resources to our local governments, and encourage you to support extending these, happy that you're extending these planning services to counties. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much for your testimony. I just want to thank Representative Vang for bringing this bill forward and for the really inspiring leadership of all of our testifiers at the local level. We heard last week from insurers about the spiking of climate damages, and Ms. Jordan Norton, I think your vivid description of the experiences that you've seen in your township are a clear example of how this is impacting us locally. And we also heard about the importance of planning based around current data and future data, and not what we've seen in the past. And so that seems to be really telling for the work that we're doing at the local level. So we have lots of hands. We have about half an hour, so I think we'll be able to get through everyone. We'll begin with Representative Bacon.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. And I really appreciated all of the presentations today, or all of the testimony. As a former city council member myself, I love to hear about the good work that's happening at the local level. And to see that this is happening at the local level all across our state is really important, from St. Louis Park to Moorhead to Red Wing and Grand Rapids, all really important and well beyond. And that number is continuing to grow every day. I was happy to hear from Mr. Kraft that another community was declaring a climate emergency even just last night. So I think that's an important trend and important information. And so thank you all for sharing it with me. And it's going to take all of us kind of working together in order to solve the climate crisis, and at all levels of government, city, county, and state. And so I appreciate all of that. One of the questions I have is, because we know that our window of needing to act is closing, and so we need to be acting quickly, and so I'm glad that all levels can act at the same time. My question is about about how long, an estimate of how long it might take for communities to develop an action plan. So how much planning time goes into that? I don't know if that's a question for the author or Ms. Knuth. I know you've done a lot of research on what cities have done to date, but with this kind of new approach being brought forward with this bill to provide resources and expertise to cities, do we have an estimate about how long that might take to develop the plan?
Maybe we'll go to Dr. Knuth.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair and Representative Acomb. You know, I think there's a range of months to maybe up to a year, depending on how much community engagement, how much staff time is available to work on it, how much consultant time. I think having resources could help speed that up to help just, you know, we all know if we have a grant or support to help us focus us, it can speed things up. You know, and I think one of the things that has been really exciting to see in looking at these climate action plans overall is the newer ones tend to be more ambitious and to really understand that action sooner and bigger has more of a difference than commitment to long-term big action, which you may not actually achieve. So the examples of Red Wing and Duluth with the climate action work plans, which are very focused on what do we do now and over the next 5 years. And I think that's a really exciting, it's an exciting trend in this work that cities are doing. I also think there's a really important moment around planning that we're in right now as a state and as a country. And I say that because there's significant federal money coming in on infrastructure and on some of that is related to climate resilience and to clean energy and cities being able to plan for and figure out how to use that money effectively, I think will both help our communities prepare and help us as a state take advantage of that significant federal funding. And Duluth is a great example of a city that has in their climate action work plan a list of shovel-ready projects for if and when state, which, you know, the significant budget surplus or federal money becomes available, they as a city will have done the thinking and the planning to be prepared for receiving that money. So again, it can take a little time to do this planning, but then it can ramp up and accelerate what cities are able to do and focus that work on what is most effective to be doing.
Thank you, Dr. Smith. Any brief follow-up, Representative Acomb?
No, I'm okay. Good. Thank you so much.
Absolutely. All right. We have 8 hands, so let's try to keep questions and answers brief so we can get through them. Representative Hornstein.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And thank you, Representative Vang, for this excellent bill. Just reminded me a number of years ago, Senator Dibble and I did a bill that was requiring the Met Council to include greenhouse gas emissions reductions in comprehensive planning process. And that made it through a few committees, and then we ran into a lot of opposition from cities and the Met Council. And it's great to see that that has shifted quite dramatically. And it's so wonderful to see this bill. And I really appreciated, Dr. Knuth, that you talked about best practices in terms of integrating plans, you know, the planning process into, you know, climate resilience and other matters. And you had mentioned Red Wing as one of the best practices. And so I wanted to see if Councilmember Brown could elaborate a little bit more on how you integrate your comprehensive planning process with climate action. Red Wing, Richfield, and Rochester were mentioned specifically in Dr. Knuth's report.
Councilmember Brown.
Thank you, Representative Horstein. I think we just completed our 2040 comprehensive planning process in 2018 as a major, I guess, leg of that was issues of sustainability. That leg really got developed as a standalone focus on sustainability and greenhouse gas emissions. And so we work directly in our comprehensive planning with Great Plains Institute and to help develop some of the goals that were articulated through our community engagement process. So I think one of the reasons we went to a work plan model was that the large broad goals had been incorporated already into our comprehensive planning process. And as a consequence of that, kind of redoing that work didn't seem necessary. And as Ms. Knuth said, we decided that what we needed to do was figure out actions that we could take quickly to begin real reductions in our emissions, and to analyze where our emissions directly were and what we could do quickly. So that, I hope that helps address the question. A lot of it has been kind of a relationship of relying on that comprehensive plan as the backdrop. And then our belief is that what we will do is these 5 years plans every 5 years and just continue. We'll treat it more like our internal city strategic planning process, where we have our comprehensive plan, then we do our strategic plan. Out of the strategic plan, we do our five-year planning. Really, that what are we going to do? And I think we're treating it exactly in that process. So
thank you, Mr. Brown.
Thank you.
Representative Hornstein, you're...
No, thank you. I appreciate that answer. And it's great to see that we have these three examples in Dr. Knuth's report of Red Wing, Richfield, and Rochester. So hopefully we can get more and more cities integrating their comprehensive plan with climate. So very helpful and encouraging. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. Representative Swazinski.
Hey, thank you, Mr. Chair. Is Representative Bang available for a question?
She is the bill author and she's here.
Okay, sounds good. Representative Vang, so it's my understanding that the $5 million comes from the general fund for this bill?
Mr. Chair, that's correct.
And that'd be a one-time grant?
Yes.
Representative Vang.
Okay, thank you.
Representative
Swazinski. And then is there someone from it's my understanding League of Minnesota Cities in support of this bill?
Representative Vang.
Mr. Chair, that's correct.
Is there someone from the League of Minnesota Cities that could answer a question? I'm looking at my list here.
They're not here, I don't believe,
Representative. Oh, they didn't come. Okay. Maybe someone from the cities that testified. I think we heard from a few different cities. It's my understanding that the League of Minnesota Cities, or the Coalition of Greater Minnesota Cities, is asking for an increase in LGA, which would be the local government aid, and also the counties are also asking for an increase of county program aid. What is to stop you from just, one of the things we hear about from local units of government is often there's local mandates. So if we send money to you, we also mandate how you spend it. You know, if the legislature doesn't approve this bill, but does approve higher LGA or county program aid, are you guys committed to just doing this program on your own with the first 50 grand that would come into your coffers? You can each answer that.
I think we'll have time for at least one. Councilmember Kraft.
Yeah, I can't comment on the league policies on this. What I can say is that there are many needs that cities have, especially coming out of COVID, and a targeted grant program like this would be for those cities that that are at the stage where they can use it, and there's more and more, I think it would be very effective. And also, as more and more cities do it, more and more opportunities to share information. So I support HF 2200 as is.
Representative Swazinski.
Sounds good. So would you say in general, the city councils and the county commissioners would not make a commitment just with general funding if they were given just straight up cash, but if they were forced to, they would apply for the grant if it's available, but if they were just plain given more cash, they wouldn't prioritize this spending on their own.
Councilmember Kraft, yes.
Mr. Chair, Mr. Swazinski, I did not say that. I'm not making a claim of what counties and cities would do. What I am saying is that, and what you've seen is cities have found ways to do this. It's just hard to do. right? And it's just for some cities very hard to find the resources and times and approach to do it. So, you know, I'm saying this is a mechanism that can make it easier, and you're hearing from multiple cities here that this would help substantially right now.
Representative Straczynski.
Is the folks from Grand Rapids or any of the other cities like to comment on that?
Councilmember Blake.
Yeah, this is Councilmember Blake. I know what you're talking about with the LGA, but that revision is based on a formula that includes cities' aids for services and all kinds of needs besides a climate emergency. But I'm not going to say either that Grand Rapids would not prioritize a project if this bill didn't pass. But I think it would just help a lot. For example, that solar garden would already be producing electricity, I think, if this had been something that was available last year. So I think those two things are separate, and that's all my comments on that. Thank you.
Representative Straczynski, and then we'll need to keep moving forward to get to everybody.
Sounds good. And then just, you know, kind of where was the $5 million arrived at, Representative Vang? Is it just kind of an out of the sky number, or do you think there's hard numbers for a matching grant, that sort of thing?
Representative Vang.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So $5 million is a one-time appropriation. I think with the increasing demand for more cities to do climate action planning, I think if we were to, you know, max out $50,000 per city, I think it will reach 100 cities. Of course, we could always ask for more, but I think this is a good, impactful number to make a difference for the state.
Representative Igo.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So my first question is for you, Representative Vang. You know, we just got done talking about the $5 million, but my question is, what is your average kind of plan cost to write? And I think that's just really important, you know, for transparency to the taxpayers. It's coming from the general fund. What is your average consultant cost, and how long does it take them to write these plans?
Representative Vang.
Mr. Chair, I will defer this to Dr. Knutz, who may have better understanding of the cost of making these climate action plans.
Dr. Knuth.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair and Representative, for the question. I think it's a range, and it depends on how the city or county decides to use their resources. Some, like the city of Richfield, there's very much a staff-driven process. It did not have as much technical analysis, but it was helping to align the city resources. And that would be less expensive than, say, Albert Lea or the city of St. Paul, who worked with consultants who could help them analyze what groups were more vulnerable, what neighborhoods were more vulnerable to flooding, what was the scale of the building emissions reductions that needed to happen. So it's a range, and it depends on how cities decide to focus their resources. I know a conversation Kathleen Doran Norton and I had, just the terrain analysis in Bridgewater Township was about $50,000. Now, terrain analysis may not be part of every climate action planning process, but some of this technical work can become pricey. And I think if Councilmember Kraft is interested in commenting on this in terms of city budgets and looking at how cities have pieced together the resources to do it, and in reference to the previous question, I think if you look at these plans, some of it's city staff, some of it's coming probably from the general fund of a city. Some of it is cities going out and securing grants from different foundation or other funding support. But that in itself takes significant resource and capacity. So from a fairness and an equity perspective, particularly for smaller cities, having a state-run and financed grant program will enable smaller cities without some of that staff capacity to be able to secure the resources without having to go out to foundations and things at the level that these early adopting cities have done. So if your Councilmember Kraft, I think, would have some more insight into some of the costs as well.
Very briefly, Councilmember Kraft, because we still have a lot of questions to get.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. What Dr. Kinney said is absolutely spot on. I mean, I've heard of, at the low end, costs in the low tens of thousands, you know, 10, 20,000 for small things, and then depends on how significant you get, if for a larger city can touch into the six figures. So I think this approach here of 50,000 is up to 50,000 will hit the sweet spot of the kind of cities, the kind of things that cities are doing, especially that I believe it includes some matching grants. And Dr. Kunt is absolutely right. As I told you the story of Graham Murray, you know, all kinds of machinations were being done to figure out how to do this. And it's a barrier for especially for smaller cities.
Representative Weigel.
Thank you both for those answers. You know, we need to have those kind of conversations so the taxpayers in Minnesota understand it. You know, if I could just have one quick follow-up for both of you then. You know, when you're writing these plans, do you consider statewide goals, but as well as global goals, right? Because you talked about a lot about equity and inclusivity. Do we talk about how, you know, these plans would affect places around the globe, our country, and our state? Because I think, you know, what we're seeing around the world right now is that our decisions are really tied to supply chain management. I just want to make sure those conversations are part of climate action plans.
Councilmember Kraft, go ahead.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. The planning process does start within the overall context of what's going on in the globe and where we need to be to as a globe, and everyone needs to do their part in this. So it does take that into account as you're thinking about the global goals. It often takes into account state goals and then your local situation. So yes.
Thank you, Representative Lippert.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And so I've been thinking about the possible benefits of having a county climate action plan, and it seems to me that there will be opportunities for collaboration among local units of government if you have that overarching plan. Dr. Knuth, I'm wondering if Hennepin County is seeing some of these opportunities. Maybe Ms. Doran Norton, if you could think of some ways that townships might be able to work together if a county plan was in place.
Dr. Knuth first, and then we'll go to Ms. Doran Norton.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair and Representative Lippert. Yeah, I really appreciate the question because, as you know, counties do have a little bit of a different role than cities. And, you know, Hennepin County is the state's most populous county, took a different approach to their climate action planning than what we've seen cities doing. And it was very much, as you noted, focused on collaborating with other levels of government within the county. So with cities, with soil and water, well, county's soil and water conservation district, but with watershed districts. So there was a lot of this sort of community engagement of the Hennepin County Climate Action Plan was really focused on how to connect with and support local governments, particularly cities, on making the kind of progress they want to make on climate action. And an example of, in Hennepin County, of something the county is doing is they are coordinating a building efficiency coalition collaboration among cities within the county. And that's something that counties are able to do in a way that cities are not able to do, and counties are able to do in a way that state government is not able to do. And so I think allowing this grant program to work with other levels of local government, I think, is really useful. And, you know, we're seeing innovation of local government leadership by going through the process of figuring out what to do and how a particular local government can do it. And I would leave it to, I think Ms. Doran Norton would have a great perspective as a township representative and former township supervisor about how a county could be really important.
Ms. Doran Norton.
Thank you. Yes, I think absolutely. I think of the small cities in Rice County that are smaller than my township, but certainly much more complex in their operations because of the very things that cities do. The other thing I think about is that many times climate adaptation, flood control, and that sort of thing is cheaper in more natural areas, undeveloped areas, than it is within the developed areas of small cities. I also think of how expensive engineers are on trying to find time in a big, you know, from a big engineering company that's focused on big projects, not small projects, and how collaboration with counties might help that sort of thing occur more easily. We probably spent, townships don't have staff, and we spent once a week for at least 2 years in planning the projects that we did. And I don't know how you value our time, but that's a lot of time to spend a couple hours every week for a couple of years doing all of that. Small cities don't have staff either. And so that kind of collaboration would be very helpful.
Thank you, Ms. Dornhorn. Representative Bolt. Oh, Representative Lippert, you good?
I'm good. Thanks, Mr. Chair.
All right, Representative Bolt.
Thank you, Chair Long. I guess two quick questions if I have time. And first is wondering, you know, what's the status of the proposal in the other body, and are we in any way making progress on that side?
Representative Vang.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. We're having conversations in the Senate, but like any bills that every member has put forward, we do expect it to move forward.
Very good. Thank you. Mr. Chair, my other question would be, you know, having been on city council before too, I know sizes of cities makes a difference. I wonder how many cities are able to do their own legwork and therefore put more money into the effort versus how many will need to simply pay a consultant, and then a lot of the money goes toward consultant fees rather than final product.
Representative Bay.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I don't have the data on top of my head. Perhaps Dr. Knuth might be able to help answer that question. I think that, you know, if cities are saying they need help with this climate action planning, I think as a state that we, if we're able to provide the support, that we should. It is a good long-term planning and smart investment for the state to continue to do this. And perhaps Dr. Knuth, you can help answer the question.
Dr. Knuth.
Yeah, thank you for the question. Thank you, Mr. Chair, Representative. I think one of the strengths of House File 2200 is that it trusts local government leadership to know what the people in their city or county or township need and how to engage effectively. And, you know, I think it's also useful to note that, you know, talking about, I'm not sure if it's a bad thing that money would go to consultants, because what I've seen in looking at plans across the state is that consultants can help cities ramp up more quickly and can help cities wrap their heads around what they need to do if they don't have that kind of expertise on staff and don't have a city or a county budget that enables that kind of hiring for a permanent staff member. A consultant can really help educate city staff in a faster way and have the focus of these planning processes be more effective at the city or the county doing the kind of work that is useful and important. So I expect it would be a mix in the planning processes that have happened already. Some have been more staff-led and some have been staff-led with consultants' help. And that, you know, that doesn't necessarily depend on the size of the city. St. Paul, for example, worked with the Great Plains Institute. Minneapolis, I think, will announce that working with a consultant on their city climate action planning process. So it by ramping up this planning work, we are in a way ramping up the expertise and the capability of Minnesotans all over the state to take effective, smart climate action. And I see that as a really useful thing state government can do in terms of investing in local leadership and capacity and really trusting local government leadership to know what their communities need.
Councilmember Kraft, I see you have your hands up. So if you want to briefly add, then we have three more hands to get to.
Thanks, Charlie. Briefly, I agree that the consultants can really shorten this and be more cost effective than trying to do everything from a staff perspective. I will tell you, in my couple of years on council, I know even St. Louis Park, which is a mid-sized city that has a decent amount of staff. We use consultants for street design when we need something specifically difficult, our water infrastructure. We've also used them around police reform, right, and police. So they, and I appreciate I think what's behind this question of making sure we're good stewards of people's money, which I absolutely agree with, but the judicious use of consultants here can actually help us be more effective more rapidly and more cost effectively.
Thank you, Councilmember Kraft. Representative Lee.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Representative Vang, for bringing this bill forward. Mr. Chair, maybe this question will be for Councilmember Brown or Kraft. Can you just share with me how have you used your climate action plans to guide your city's capital planning and budgeting?
Councilmember Brown first.
Thank you, Representative Lee. I think one of the big things in our climate action plan has been to develop our EV charging and EV capabilities for the city and developing more planning and zoning tools around implementing the EV infrastructure. That's been a really big focus of ours. Additionally, you know, we've been looking at building envelopes and implementing a program for commercial buildings that mimics the state building B3 program. So those are two real big things that we hit early on as elements of our climate action work plan and already are being incorporated into our CIP planning, our capital planning.
Councilmember Kraft.
I think one of the key benefits of having a plan like this is that it becomes a lens, a climate and sustainability lens with which we view almost everything that we do. So it is infused throughout our capital improvement plan in things like solar on our rec center that's going in that'll save us a bunch of money over time. As we purchase new vehicles, new heavy duty vehicles for plowing and other things, we look at what's the most efficient, gas efficient or electric alternatives. As we do street improvements or add bridges in place, we're looking at those through a lens as well of how they can help get more people out walking and biking to not only reduce the amount of pollution coming from fossil fuel vehicles, but also to create community. So I think having that plan is a huge thing in that it infuses almost everything we do.
Representative Lee.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Last follow-up then, just for both and maybe for some of the other local representatives on here. You know, as we travel throughout the state for capital investment, bonding our tours and whatnot, we hear a lot of requests for projects that have been impacted by, you know, some of these extreme weathers that we are seeing. And so I'm just curious, you know, in your plans, do you really look at the climate's impact to your local infrastructure right now and how would that potentially lead to you know, your municipalities, your local units of government reaching out to the state for capital investment dollars in the future?
Anybody want to respond to that? Councilmember Kraft, you want to?
Yeah, I can. I was trying to pause it. Well, I tell you, in St. Louis Park, we had a couple of years ago flooding happen that had never happened before, and it flooded out an area that had a new playground for a school we had just reopened. And that caused kids to not be able to go outside in the playground for like 6 to 8 weeks. So that kind of infrastructure is something we're now evaluating. Do we need to put in a permanent new pumping station that could cost $500,000? I will also tell you in our neighboring community of Edina, they're just investing about $12 million on flood mitigation on areas that are as more rain events have happened. I don't know if they've come for that, but those kinds of things, as we look at our infrastructure, as we look at the increased amount of freeze-thaw cycles and the impacts of on our roads, I fully anticipate that there'll be increasing needs in the future.
All right, we have two more hands and we have two more bills to get to. So if we could make these questions and responses brief, that would be great. Representative Franz.
Chair and Representative Vang, I
You know, I know that you're very passionate about this bill, but I would say, members, that perhaps this topic isn't our most pressing issue in the state. Right now, it's public safety. So about 45 minutes ago, a vehicle was involved in a drive-by shooting, shots fired.
This goes
toward my comments, Mr. Chair.
Okay. We are the Energy Committee, not the Public Safety Committee.
Doesn't matter.
Later today.
It's all part of the plan, sir. So vehicle involved in a drive-by shooting, shots fired, was headed towards Minneapolis from 57th and Humboldt Avenue North, Brooklyn Center. So I would say, Representative Vang, that perhaps public safety is something that we should be putting the $5 million for. I know that across the state, people are wondering about roads and bridges, wastewater treatment. That's what they're wondering about for their cities, their townships, their counties. Everyday people are worried about the price of gas, and they're not exactly too thrilled about policymakers here at the legislature putting more climate change money into grifting projects. We heard about how the important need for consultants are, but I'll remind the body that we are dealing with a major fraud with the Feeding Our Future program, where hundreds of millions of dollars were entrusted in a group that was supposed to be feeding children. Instead, it went to line their own pocket. And instead, we should have been calling that feeding our fraud instead of feeding our future. And then I heard about the $50,000, it will hit the sweet spot. Well, I'm wondering then, if that hits the sweet spot, does that mean climate change has been solved in those particular communities, Representative Vang? And then if this is such a pressing issue, Representative Vang, if this climate change is such a pressing issue, your bill was introduced March 15th, 2021. Why did it take 365 days later to get a hearing? Thank you.
I didn't realize that Feeding Our Future did climate planning, but maybe I missed something. Representative Vang.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Franson, in case you may not know, I am a member of the Public Safety Committee, and I'm working closely with my colleagues on a package that has millions of dollars that deals with the public safety issues in the state. So that is a top of mind issues for me and my colleagues. And $5 million for this bill is not a lot of money. We have a $9 billion surplus that we can give back to Minnesotans in this state. And so we can definitely afford to invest in $5 million. And I know, Mr. Chair, our time is brief, but that's will be my quick response for Representative Franson. And
thank you, Representative Vang. Representative Hollins, and then we're going to have to move on.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Representative Vang, for bringing this bill. I honestly am not even sure how to follow the previous line of questioning at this point. I don't want to delve super deep into that, except to say we have a budget to do climate and energy work, and that's what we're doing here. And this is a well-vetted, well-received bill. I got text messages from my own county saying how happy they were that counties have been included in this particular provision. I don't think that any group of people in Minnesota would say that this is not well-received and this isn't something that they care about. They would like to absolutely have funding for this. So what I was originally going to say is, thank you so much for thinking about smaller municipalities, cities, and counties in this work. Even though I currently live and represent the capital city in a major metropolitan area, I was born and raised in a small town. And knowing that everybody's needs are different and getting that support from the state can make such a huge difference when we're talking about creating climate action plans and resiliency plans. So thank you so much, Representative Vang, for bringing this really important piece of legislation here. I appreciate all the hard work you did on this, and I know that the other counties and cities in the state of Minnesota appreciate it as well. Thank you.
So we are over time, members, so I'm sorry, Representative Stevenson, we won't have time to get to you, but thank you, Representative Vang, for bringing your bill forward. And with that, I will renew my motion that House File 2200 be laid over, and the bill is laid over. Next, we have Representative Stevenson's bill, House File 4180. And would you care to move your bill, Representative Stevenson?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I move that my bill be laid over for future consideration and omnibus.
Representative Stevenson moves that House File 4180 be laid over for possible inclusion, and I believe we have an author's amendment as well.
Yes, Mr. Chair, I would move that amendment, and I'm forgetting the number on it now.
A2, I believe.
The A2 amendment.
Representative Stevenson moves the A2 amendment. Would you like to describe your amendment?
This gets the bill in the shape I'd like the committee to consider it, including dealing with prevailing wage requirements for this particular proposal.
Any discussion to the A2? Seeing no discussion, all those in favor say aye.
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 Any opposed? The amendment is adopted. Please tell us about your bill, Representative Stevenson.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair, and I'll be very quick. This relates to the National Sports Center, which is a phenomenal asset to the entire state and the North Metro in particular, and allocates some RDA funding to help them put solar on the roof of that building, which I think will decrease the cost for community members around the region in accessing their phenomenal facilities, including the large amount of ice rinks that they maintain. Mr. Chair, I do have a couple of testifiers who I think can speak more completely to the program. And in the interest of time, I'll leave my remarks at that.
All right. First, I think we have Todd Johnson, Executive Director of the Minnesota Amateur Sports Commission. Welcome to the committee. Please introduce yourself for the record and proceed.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chair. My name is Todd Johnson, Executive Director of the Minnesota Amateur Sports Commission. Mr. Chair, committee members, I'll try to be brief. That was a long discussion, a good discussion. This is a little bit simpler. As Representative Stevens said, we have a phenomenal asset here that the legislature passed, every Minnesotan can be proud of, with the National Sports Center. We do our best to run the world's largest amateur sports facility. When I took over this position, not only did I want it to be the world's best amateur sports facility with the way we run programs and the facilities that we offer, but I also want it to be the greenest. One of those ways, we've got a pretty good story so far, especially around water usage. The DNR permits us to pump 180 million gallons because of our ditch retention system. Last year, or the year before last, we pumped 29 million gallons. So we're making headway on water, we're making headway on recycling. This is the next big thing for us to do, is look at our energy bill. When you think about this facility and 8 sheets of ice, we spend nearly $1 million a year in our energy costs for those compressors and chillers that make sure that we have ice year round in this facility. So it's obviously a state facility. It's a great opportunity. We would love to get to the point where we are net zero facility. This is a step in the right direction with regard to that. Think about the fact that this is the second largest tourist attraction in the state of Minnesota after the Mall of America. 4.2 million visitors a year come here, 2 million of those directly to the ice rink. And at the last USA Cup, we had 47 Senate districts were represented by constituents of yours at that tournament. So it's clearly a statewide facility, statewide significance. And I'll just end by saying, as everyone knows, any girl playing hockey, any boy playing hockey, when they're young kids, first thing they do is get to the rink and they press their nose up against the glass and look at the Zamboni. Well, we have six electric Zambonis here, so we will be able to use this as sort of an environmental learning opportunity for all those kids who are coming through our door, directly be able to charge those Zambonis with solar that would be on top of the ice rink, and we would put it up in an explanatory fashion. If you think about the environmental learning centers our kids or grandkids all went to, we have that sort of vision for this place as well, not only to be the recreational opportunity facility that it is, but also to use it as an educational opportunity and an energy savings opportunity for the state of Minnesota. So I've got with me our Chief Operating Officer, Steve Olson, who's going to walk through a little bit more of the details, but I just wanted to give you a broad brush, big picture overview of the project.
Thank you so much, Steve Olson. Welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm Steve Olson. I'm the Chief Operating Officer of the National Sports Center Foundation. We're the nonprofit connected to the Amateur Sports Commission that operates the facility and pays the electric bill. So as Mr. Johnson said, we're looking at a way to keep our cost per user as static as possible. And one of the areas where we'd like to do that is energy. As he said, we spend about $1 million. It's about 10 megawatts of energy. This project would save us 16 to 18% on that bill, which actually lines up with our current operating budget bottom line. So it's a significant savings to our organization. And just to reiterate, the bill is paid for by user fees paid by parents of hockey players. The state does not pay the energy bill in this facility, and we'd like to keep that cost to the user as flatlined as possible over the years. And I thank you for the time to testify today.
Thank you so much. Looks like we have some questions. Representative Swazinski.
Thank you. And this just is a general question to the, you know, it's my understanding the bill would replace the roof and then put the solar panels on top. What is the condition of the roof currently? Is there any money set aside for the replacement of that? What was the plan? If this bill doesn't move forward, is the amateur sports complex looking to get general fund dollars or bonding dollars? And what's the other alternatives? Thanks.
Mr. Olson?
I'll yield back to Mr. Johnson.
Okay, Mr. Johnson.
Great. Mr. Chair, Representative, it's a really good question. And the state of Minnesota does, on occasion, and we heard lobbying right now for some deferred maintenance funds for the ice rink and for our 26 miles of irrigation for our soccer field. So to the extent the state is involved, it is around those capital projects and then the deferred maintenance that is a piece of them. But as the case is with these roofs, again, totally pertinent and important question. We recently received quite a bit of wind and hail damage from a storm, and we are going through the process with our insurance company to figure out whether or not that is going to cover that piece of it. However, the legislature did allocate $3.1 million to the sports center to replace a 35-year-old maintenance building. That's being constructed right now with structural steel that will support these solar panels. Part of the issue is we're trying to kind of make sure we can get as much array on top of our roof as possible. Obviously, we'd like to have even more, but if we can somehow put those two projects together and potentially the roof side of this could take care of itself through the insurance company.
So, thank you, Mr. Johnson. So then if the insurance or the other building, the array fits, what would be the real ask then just for the solar array portion?
Mr. Chair, Representative Steve, do you want to take that? I don't have that number in front of me.
Mr. Olson.
Will do. Representative and Mr. Chairman, the front portion of the rink is in a potential insurance claim for hail damage. Would drop the price of the project $750,000. The rear roofs are original, built in 2003, would need to be replaced in order to place solar panels on them, where the roof and the solar panels would have a commensurate lifespan.
Representative Swazinski.
Thank you. Does the Sports Authority have any funds saved from the rental of the rink for deferred maintenance, or are you simply coming to the state to cover the cost in entirety?
Mr. Johnson.
Mr. Chair, Representative, obviously we set aside money for deferred maintenance, but a project this size, we typically, it's a 30-year-old facility, we typically do come back to the state of Minnesota as it is a state-owned facility, just like any other state-owned facility. The National Sports Center Foundation, which is the nonprofit Steve works for, and basically the management company for the facility, we do set aside nearly $1 million of a $15 million budget for deferred maintenance, but this is a 700-acre campus. And there is that money only goes so far. So I understand the gist of your question. When it becomes a bigger capital project, we do go back to the state of Minnesota.
Sounds good. And then just one final to just follow up. Thank you, Mr. Chair. So we had the four. So if I understand right, the initial bill is asking for $4.2 million. And if the insurance claim comes in at $750,000, that would drop the ask to $3.5 million. What is left of that $3.5 million that would be used for roof replacement on the rest of the building? And then what is the cost of the solar panels?
Mr. Johnson.
Steve.
Mr. Olson.
Mr. Chair, Mr. Representative, the cost of the solar panels would be $3.525 million minus $750,000.
Thank you, Mr. Olson. Representative Franzen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So, Mr. Hermanson, if I heard correctly, that the children that come through the sports center are super excited to learn about the Zambonis and they love looking at the Zambonis. You want to be able to use the solar arrays as a teaching opportunity for those students, the children that go through about the possibility for electric Zambonis, right? Using that power to charge. Did I hear that correctly?
Mr. Johnson.
Mr. Chair, Representative, yes, it's we do have six of our eight Zambonis are electric now. So there would be a direct, what's called behind the meter charging of those Zambonis.
Representative Brandt.
Thank you. So my question, my next question, my final question, Mr. Hermanson, is during
Mr. Johnson.
Well, his handle says Mr. Hermanson on. Or maybe, yeah. Oh, you're right. Okay, Mr. Johnson, sorry about that. I'm looking up. Okay, so the question that I have, the next final question I have, then during these opportunities that you're engaging with the children, are they also learning about the labor practices that go into solar panels and the batteries? So it's not very... they're using child and slave labor. And I'm just wondering if you also explain how the parts are made, you know, using children their age to dig in the mines and then, you know, terrible human rights issues in places like the Congo and China so that they can see this electric Zamboni and the solar panels.
Representative Stevenson, you want to take that?
No, the question is for
Representative. Yeah, you know, I think that I get the point of the question that Representative Franzen is trying to ask Mr. Johnson there. And I think that the point of this legislation is to give a phenomenal asset in our community the ability to keep down prices so that kids can actually access the hockey rinks that we maintain there. I think that the opportunities to have them have some educational opportunities on the side are a nice ancillary benefit. And I think it's wonderful that Representative Franzen is taking every opportunity to advance her political agenda here today by asking people all sorts of questions, but it kind of distracts from the point of this, which is to enhance our regional asset with some improvements.
Okay. Then it may come and then we're gonna have to move to our final bill. Representative Franzen, we have one more bill and seven more minutes, so we're going to have to keep moving. Representative Akam.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Representative Stevenson, for bringing this forward. My question is really on the same topic of the electric Zambonis, and I find that a really interesting concept that could be used all across our state, especially as it's important as we're electrifying our transportation. And as I look at my phone and how much money I save because I drive an electric car, and I save quite a bit. And so I'm wondering two quick questions for you about that. And I know it's not on the topic of the bill, but how much do electric Zambonis cost in comparison to a traditional? And are you also seeing a cost savings because of not having, being able to use electricity to fuel them rather than a liquid fuel?
Mr. Johnson.
Mr. Chair, Representative Akam, thank you. It's a great question. Steve will have the exact differential. Remember, part of the reason, not only is it energy, the right thing to do on the energy side, part of the reason ice rinks try to move away from propane is the air quality within those ice rinks and what happens with the air exchange within buildings that also leads to additional environmental costs when you have to move your air through so much more in the middle of the winter because of the propane in the Zamboni. So there are dual benefits both on the energy side and also on the clean air side to having electric Zambonis. Steve, do you know the difference in the cost? I think the difference is roughly $75,000 a piece. I'm not sure.
Mr. Olson, real briefly.
Mr. Chair and Representative Akin, it's come down. It's about $50,000, and the offset with propane brings that down into the $35,000 range in the first 5 years.
Representative Mecklen, real quick, and then we're going to have to wrap this bill up.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I have a really quick question. Based on the numbers given between Mr. Johnson and Mr. Olson, one of the two of them, 16 to 18% savings on $1 million a year, $3.565 million for the investment. How many years is the return on investment is my simple question.
Mr. Johnson.
Yep, Mr. Chair, Representative, the payback on this is 20 years.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Representative Mecklen. Representative Stevenson, any closing comments to your bill?
Mr. Chair, it's a good bill, and I hope to earn the committee's support when we come back.
Representative Stevenson renews his motion that House File 4180 be laid over, and the bill is laid over. Our final bill for the day is House File 3921. Representative Swidzinski, would you like to move your bill?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I move House File 3921 to be possibly included in a future bill.
All right. Representative Swidzinski moves House File 3921 be laid over for possible inclusion. Please tell us about your bill.
The bill approximately appropriates $2.2 million from the RDA fund to help work on the increased costs with a hydroelectric facility in Granite Falls. The project was funded in the last bill that was moved forward by your committee. And being an older facility has seen an increased need of maintenance because of the age of the project. And I have a testimony from the city that would like to speak on behalf of the bill. Thank you.
I have Crystal Johnson, city manager from Granite Falls. Please introduce yourself and proceed with your testimony.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. I appreciate your time this morning to talk about a very important bill with our community. My name is Crystal Johnson. I'm the city manager for Granite Falls. I know we're very limited on time, so I will keep my comments to the point and brief here out of respect to that. Moving forward with continuing and finishing this project will not only help allow the city to double our hydroelectric capacity with our facility, but also the increased output will further result in cost savings with a significant revenue loss as a result of the final decommissioning of the former NSP or XL Energy generation plant. And over the last few years, we have seen nearly a 31% drop in XL's property valuation in Granite Falls, and that has resulted in a lot of concerns for our community, and this project moving forward will result in replacing our turbine number 3 and finishing this project will result in cost savings that will significantly help our community, especially during a difficult time as such as COVID-19. Further moving forward and finishing this project will continue for many years a continued form of renewable, carbon-free, pollution-free, and fuel-free energy. For again, many years to come. So with that, I certainly want to allow an opportunity for questions. So I will stop here and I am happy to answer any questions regarding our bill.
All right. I have one question. So Ms. Johnson, we did have appropriation in the bill last year for this, and can you just spell out a little bit more what's changed and why there is a new ask, Ms. Johnson.
Sure. During phase one of going through those improvements, we did, the hydroelectric plant, we have to do different things to be able to view. And as you get into these projects, you start discovering more critical infrastructure needs. As Representative Swidzinski shared, it is an aged facility. So we did discover additional improvements that are needed, as well as specifically of that amount, $490,000 is a high bid that came in with turbine number 3. The facility houses 3 turbines. We are using RDA funding to replace turbine number 3.
And after bidding twice, it came back significantly higher as a result of COVID impacts of higher labor, material shortages. So we are asking for assistance to move forward in being able to finish the project that was started originally with turbine number 3, as well as assist us with these other critical infrastructure repairs, as this type of cost, $1.2 million, is a massive cost for a city of less than 3,000 in population. And this is, again, on top of a significant revenue impact that we've had with the decommissioning of the Xcel Energy plant.
Representative. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Two quick questions. One is, I understand this used to be an Xcel facility. Is it now owned by, well, who owns the facility now that would benefit from this? And then the city of Grand Falls has a municipal utility. Is that correct? Those are my two questions.
Representative.
Sure. So the hydroelectric is, I believe, owned by the city, and then just outside of it, so there's an Xcel, former Xcel coal plant, just on the other side of town from this. So I think we're talking about two different facilities, but that's my understanding.
Representatives, Ms. Johnson, looks like you wanted to chime in.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members. Yes, so that is correct. The city owns the hydroelectric facility. We have always owned the facility, and it benefits the residents of Granite Falls and being able to produce that energy. And it is a separate plant that we are talking about. Within city limits is an energy or Xcel Energy owned former NSP plant that recently was decommissioned and had a significant impact to our local tax base.
Representative,
thank you.
I don't see any further hands. Representative Swazinski, any closing remarks to your bill?
Thank you, Mr. Chair, for your time. And just renew my motion to lay House File 3921 for possible inclusion.
Representative Swazinski removes his motion that House File 3921 be laid over. It is laid over. That is our business for today, members, and we are adjourned.